Good morning. I was a bit surprised, Griselda, by your last opposition between explosion and settlement. Those are two very loaded terms these days, and I don't think we should frame the very difficult issue we are facing at the museum today under the aegis of such an opposition. What struck me in today's presentation is that we had strategies that really challenged the museum, but no mention that it is on the process of being exploded per se. Nanette Solomit referred to the museum expanding, but most of the metaphors coming in Nanette Solomit's and Gerald McMaster's presentation were of the order of absorption, inclusion, appropriation, cannibalism. So basically, what was at stake there, what seems to have struck our commentators this morning, is the terrible voracity of the institution. And I was much taken by that because I've been repeating for a number of years now, given my particular place in the agenda of Canadian studies, that my problem has always been the problem of inclusion and very rarely a problem of exclusion. More and more, I find myself in tune with the current agenda of debates, because whereas a first generation of debaters of the museum after modernism would have stressed this issue of what the museum excludes, what we found today is the problem of what the museum now includes: feminism, First Nations, and how it challenges and makes it very real for us to question what museums are doing today in our culture. I had an incredible stroke of luck as I listened to Griselda Pollack this morning presenting this slide, because as I was wondering if I could bring together all these talks, she brought the two works on which I've done my PhD. Just mentioning it so that you won't think me more knowledgeable than I am, actually. And I would like to come back to the two presentations by reading them through literally the perspective, pun intended, that is being presented here. What we have in this picture by Hubert Robert is very obviously the translation of a linear timeline, that of history of art, into a tunnel that is a linear space, and in a way that embodies the Enlightenment's ideology of progress as one of the founding myths of the institution. That was how the curators of the Louvre depicted the process of going through the gallery. It was going through the progress of arts. Progress as improvement is a definition of the term one might have expected the encyclopedia to produce in the 18th century, but instead progress is very laconically defined in the encyclopedia as a movement forward. The tunnel as movement forward, timeline made space, is a structure that has serious consequences for the museum picture. For example, if we compare this picture to the previous representation of collections that showed the pictures as a facade of pictures glued together, we realize that here we are left with a disappearing collection, almost no work, one actually, but just a chain of frames that beautifully embodies the historicism of the museum, of the modern museum. Whereas the Raphael, whereas the Raphael, should be to your right, is there to stand for the isolated, fetishized picture that is a token of essentialism in the new museum. Well, this disappearance of the museum text, of what is there, is precisely one of the stakes in Nanette Solomit's feminist strategy to read against the grain, to produce the layering of voices in the exhibition she endeavors to study. She has managed to bring out the voice of the artists of Artemisia, of the curators through the curatorial entries, and of course of the spectator, given the viewer, given a pragmatic preference on the effect of the work on who's actually watching and experiencing the exhibition. So she has brought through also a reading of the exhibition, the necessity of reading the text of an exhibition at the syntactic level by the collaboration and the conjunctions that are being produced through the depiction of space, whereas museums today have a tendency to emphasize the experience that they propose to us, therefore bringing us back not to the syntactic but much to the pragmatic, or to present, when they present blockbusters, to present labels that have a very predetermined and overload semantic level and resonance. But what just touched me perhaps the most in Ninette's presentation, perhaps because I myself are I'm professor of art history, is the reference to pedagogy. And of course I read into that a very strong tribute to what Judith had been doing in institutions through departments of art education. The theme of pedagogy is very much present in the painting that I'm showing you. If I am to stay with the motif of mother and child on which Ninette concluded, I would just like to point out one detail. Of a mother being pulled by a child who wants to go nearer to the painter copying the work. And that was a big problem for the curators, who thought that artists should not be working while they were visitors, because visitors were likely to appreciate the copy more than the art on the wall, because it was in the process of being done. When you read the Minute of the Louvre, you read all this and the problem that copyists stress in the institution. But you have the pedagogical function of the mother taking the child to the museum, and it's the museum seen as a school for artists as well as for the people. The reference to pedagogy and education of the museum not only brings back the memory of Judith and of Judith's work within the institution, but it's, it reminds us how unmonolithic the museum is today, and we sometimes tend to forget it. There is a war being waged in institutions today between different departments and the different pressures being exerted on departments, whereas one works within the department with curators, or in the art education department, or in the communication department of museums. For my part, I've, the first thing I do when I'm to work with a museum is to inquire if communication rules the place, and if they do, I go work elsewhere. But museums are far from being the monolithic structure we tend to see them to be. And one of Judith's achievements was that she managed to challenge the museum while her position was one of serving the populace, as you refer, basically the powerful new audience. And yet, that position is the one from which she challenged the institution, whereas that was a position where one might have expected to find a crowd pleaser and someone who would favor the settlement attitude. So this is another point that I wanted to bring out, and also the fact that the dismissal of the exhibition construction as a pedagogical tool from the museum's point of view doesn't have to be followed by all of us. And I was very happy to see that despite what the museum claims it's doing when it does exhibition, it pedagogues and professors always have the possibility to embezzle the museum and bring a kind of their own pedagogical agenda to it. Then, moving to Gerald's contribution, I would... It won't be as visible in the work, and yet it's all there. What I was struck by is the resonance of his presentation with a synchrony that is at the heart of the foundation of the museum, and that is the connection between the birth of the museum and that of the fetish, a synchrony that has been pointed out in The Art of Art History by Donald Preciosi. And I mean the fetish more in the anthropological history of religion way that influenced Marxism later on than through a psychoanalytical theory, although all these definitions share the same animation of the inanimate. Basically, Natalie Einisch has written in a beautiful text where she tries to invent a person-object function similar to the actorial function of Michel Foucault, and she enumerates three models of what constitute a person-object. The first one is a relic, something that has belonged to someone special. The second one is the fetish, something that acts like a person. And the third one is the work of art that is treated as a person. On the ground that it is one work is not cannot be substitute to another work. In the light of that typology, one realizes that when First Nation artists want their work to be taken out of ethno museums and put in art museums, it's precisely the status of not being relics, but being works of art, that is not being something that belonged to someone in the past, but something that in the present has this fetishist in the generic sense of being treated as a person that is. But what is very phenomenal in the presentations he made today, despite the different modalities that he enumerated, is that all these works have in common to critique the fetishization, the treating of works of art as living thing that is so has so permeated our museum culture, and instead showing the reversal in the heart of the museum, subjects being treated as objects rather than objects having the status of a person or being treated as a subject. We could hear that in what he said of James Luna, Jane Ash Poitras, and John Cardinal Schubert as well. So it's a very strong critique that is being there of reversing the very subject-object relationship that is at the very heart of what has constituted the museum. And the questions opened by Jane Ash Poitras' last window glass is, does it mean that there can no longer be any object in the vitrine if we are to get out of that problematic opposition between objects being treated as subjects and subjects being objectified by institutions. I will stop here, I think, because I would like to us to be able to discuss a little, but I would just like to point that the position of Denis Zakharopoulos has made very clear that the museums has expanded its discourse, that even the curators that does not work within the museum, but works in other around other events, find themselves with the structure and the museum complex that has spread throughout the entire art institution, so proving that it's not sufficient to be outside of it, to be critical of it, and that whether you're inside or outside, the problem we face in our challenge to the institution is very acute indeed. So perhaps from there we can proceed to a discussion.
Can we turn the microphones on for the speakers there? phone. Oh, no, not the wife.
Okay. Is this on?
It's terrible.
Can we take those lights down? I mean, maybe we just speak to you out of the darkness, because then we can actually see the audience. So that's
well, maybe you can turn on the lights on the audience as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.